In an era where companies proudly proclaim our people are our greatest asset on their websites, Rod Wagner delivers a provocative wake-up call. Your employees are not assets, and they're certainly not yours. This bold statement forms the foundation of Widgets, a book that has become required reading in executive suites from Silicon Valley to Wall Street. Wagner's work gained particular relevance during the Great Resignation, as millions of workers demonstrated they were no longer willing to be treated as interchangeable parts in corporate machines. Drawing from extensive global research across hundreds of organizations, Wagner exposes the fundamental disconnect between how companies talk about their people and how they actually treat them. The book resonated so deeply with workers that it sparked a movement on social media with the hashtag #NotAWidget, where employees shared stories of dehumanizing workplace practices. As Arianna Huffington noted, this book arrived at precisely the moment businesses needed to hear its message. The fundamental truth about today's workforce is simple but profound. Employees will return exactly what they receive. Commitment for commitment, indifference for indifference, excellence for excellence. This principle of reciprocity governs workplace relationships more powerfully than any management theory or engagement initiative. The Great Recession fundamentally altered workplace dynamics. Before the crash, voluntary quits consistently outnumbered involuntary terminations, with approximately 3 million people quitting monthly versus 1.8 million being fired. When markets collapsed, this pattern reversed dramatically. Companies stopped hiring and began terminating employees at 40% higher rates. For the first time in recent history, from November 2008 through March 2010, more people were fired than quit voluntarily. During this period, employees lost their leverage. Nearly 7 unemployed people competed for each job opening. Many stayed in jobs they disliked, holding their breath or keeping their heads down. Companies that exploited this power imbalance failed to recognize that employees have long memories and recessions eventually end. As the economy recovered, workers gradually regained leverage. Resignations again outnumbered terminations by 2010, labor shortages emerged in many industries, and employee poaching increased. The implicit contract between employees and companies fundamentally changed. Young workers entered with new expectations, experienced workers became more mercenary after seeing trust betrayed, and social media transformed how work experiences are shared. Today's workforce is more individualistic, impatient, connected, and vocal than ever before. They trust businesses less and demand better leadership. Most companies remain unprepared for this new reality, where reciprocal employees will return exactly what they receive. Despite some executives and consultants labeling disengaged employees as cancer or corporate terrorists, research shows these workers aren't saboteurs. They're simply responding naturally to their conditions. Even frustrated employees maintain professional standards longer than companies deserve, particularly in customer service. The first casualties of poor leadership are employees' desire to stay and willingness to recommend the company, followed by their best ideas. What persists longest is their commitment to customers and finding better ways to work. A company gets the engagement it deserves through reciprocity, and consequently, the performance it deserves. David McCullough Jr., a high school English teacher, gained unexpected fame with his "You're Not Special" graduation speech that went viral in 2012. He challenged the prevailing notion that today's graduates are exceptional, pointing out their striking uniformity despite years of constant praise and helicopter parenting. The speech resonated deeply across generations, earning over 3.5 million YouTube views and leading to his book, You Are Not Special, and Other Encouragements, which further explored the paradox of mass individualism. Despite McCullough's sobering message, today's employees increasingly expect individualized treatment in the workplace. The modern office environment faces a workforce raised in an unprecedented culture of personalization, accelerated by social media platforms where everyone serves as the protagonist of their own digital narrative. Employees arrive at work on Monday after weekends of curating their Instagram feeds, managing their personal brands on LinkedIn, and being the center of their digital universes, naturally expecting similar recognition and personalization in their professional lives. Understanding each employee as an individual has become fundamental to engagement and retention. While large organizations necessarily standardize certain processes for efficiency and fairness, treating employees as interchangeable widgets severely damages motivation and productivity. Even well-intentioned diversity and inclusion initiatives can sometimes backfire by inadvertently categorizing rather than truly individualizing people. For instance, assuming all millennials want the same benefits package or that all working parents have identical flexibility needs oversimplifies complex individual preferences. The direct manager emerges as the crucial link in this dynamic, being the only person with both the authority and relationship depth to truly understand an employee's unique motivations and needs. Gallup research demonstrates that employees whose managers understand their strengths are 71% more likely to feel engaged and 59% more likely to stay with their company long term. Conversely, the cost of inattentive management is steep, with 40% of employees who describe their managers as clueless about their work actively planning to leave within a year. The most effective managers invest significant time in learning what motivates each team member individually. They recognize that while some employees thrive on public recognition in team meetings, others find it mortifying and prefer private acknowledgement. Some need detailed step-by-step instructions to feel confident, while others feel micromanaged by the same approach and want broad autonomy. Some are energized by competition and leaderboards, while others perform better in collaborative environments. These differences aren't mere preferences. They represent fundamental variations in how each person experiences and derives meaning from work. When organizations implement standardized engagement strategies, they often inadvertently create systems that work well for some employees while actively disengaging others. The solution isn't more standardization, but rather increased personalization, providing managers with the flexibility, tools, and training to respond to individual needs while maintaining fairness and consistency in outcomes. This might mean offering multiple paths for career advancement, diverse recognition programs, and flexible work arrangements that can be tailored to individual circumstances while still serving organizational goals. Bill Hewlett's approach during the 1970 recession exemplifies the power of removing fear from the workplace. When HP needed to cut costs by 10%, Hewlett rejected arbitrary terminations, instead implementing a company-wide program where everyone, including executives, took every other Friday off with a corresponding pay cut. This 9-day fortnight was rooted in two motivations, loyalty to employees and labor hoarding, the practical recognition that losing talented people during downturns disadvantages companies during recovery. The approach generated tremendous loyalty, with an upwelling of gratitude, even love, that carried HP for decades. Historically, companies reduced employment more slowly than output during recessions, keeping their workforce intact for the eventual recovery. However, recent decades have seen a shift, with firms cutting workers more aggressively during downturns, treating them as disposable in what economist Paul Krugman attributes to companies knowing they're not going to need those laid-off workers for a long time. This fundamental transformation in the social contract between companies and workers has become more mercenary and less focused on long-term mutual commitment. Fear is the crudest managerial tactic, an emotional baseball bat threatening employee security. 1 in 5 American workers reports management using fear as motivation. While fear can drive short-term performance, it produces unhealthy, unsustainable results, including unethical behaviors and damaged customer relationships. The brain's fight-or-flight response to threats makes thoughtful reflection impossible, which is why rank-and-yank performance systems fail. Circuit City's collapse illustrates this principle perfectly. After firing its highest-paid and most experienced workers to cut costs, the company's feudal and paranoid culture accelerated its demise. As founder's son, Alan Wurzel, noted, successful companies create a caring and ethical culture where employees can make mistakes without fear of adverse consequences. When companies lay off workers, commitment among remaining employees drops by half, while desire to leave jumps 50%. The most talented leave first, while mediocre performers remain. Performance metrics decline across creativity, customer focus, company pride, and willingness to recommend the workplace. Companies that speak poorly of departed employees create motivated competitors who know their weaknesses. Two alternatives emerge: either maintain lean staffing to avoid layoffs altogether, or openly acknowledge a new arrangement where neither side expects permanent loyalty. The traditional fiction of pretending to lifetime employment no longer works, requiring companies to make temporary relationships more valuable for employees through better terms and transparent expectations. Money functions like food, tools, and drugs, simultaneously practical and psychological. Unlike simple objects, money's value is learned and symbolic, carefully designed to create an illusion of stability and worth beyond mere paper. In a direct deposit world, no one rushes home excited about receiving the same paycheck they've gotten for months. Even raises quickly lose their motivational power due to hedonic adaptation, the psychological tendency to return to baseline satisfaction levels regardless of changes in circumstances. This counterintuitive fact doesn't diminish pay's importance, but suggests it's better suited for attracting and retaining employees than motivating them. Harvard researchers demonstrated this principle when they offered some workers $3 an hour for data entry, then surprised them with $4 an hour instead. These workers outperformed those initially offered $4 an hour, proving that $3 plus one is psychologically greater than $4. The difference is reciprocity. Generosity of pay inspires generosity of effort. Companies that treat employees like commodities to be acquired at the lowest price get precisely what they pay for: minimal effort. This creates a destructive cycle where employers pretend to pay fairly and employees pretend to work hard. By contrast, when employees believe their company is actively helping me reach my long-term financial goals, they're dramatically more loyal and engaged. 92% say their jobs bring out their best ideas versus just 12% of those who feel their company doesn't care about their financial future. Money becomes problematic when issues of fairness arise. Humans measure their compensation not in absolute terms, but relative to others. Studies show many would prefer making less money overall if it meant earning more than their peers. As transparency increases through court rulings, websites publishing salaries, and other disclosures, pay inequities become increasingly visible. Those who discover they're paid below the median for their department report lower satisfaction and higher likelihood of quitting, while those paid above average show little change in attitude. The solution isn't necessarily paying everyone equally or exorbitantly, but ensuring compensation feels fair and adequate. When employees aren't worried about money, they can focus their energy on the work itself rather than constantly comparing their situation to others or searching for better opportunities elsewhere. The quantified self movement has entered the workplace with unprecedented force, bringing sophisticated tracking tools and wellness metrics into corporate culture. However, wellness initiatives frequently backfire when companies fail to recognize fundamental human limits and needs. Research shows that effective well-being strategies must acknowledge that people can be highly productive and healthy within reasonable boundaries, but become dramatically error-prone and unhealthy when pushed beyond their natural thresholds. Americans now work significantly longer hours, the equivalent of one extra month per year compared to 1976, with a quarter receiving no paid vacation at all. This trend persists despite numerous studies showing that extended hours lead to diminishing returns, increased mistakes, and higher healthcare costs. This contradicts decades of business wisdom dating back to Henry Ford's revolutionary 40-hour workweek that recognized overworking employees was stupid, wasteful, dangerous, and expensive. Studies from Harvard Business School demonstrate that every 10% increase in overtime results in a 2.4% decrease in productivity. Progressive organizations like Slalom Consulting, Patagonia, Bandwidth, and Full Contact have implemented groundbreaking policies that actively protect work-life boundaries. Patagonia's Let My People Go Surfing philosophy allows employees to set their own hours for outdoor activities, resulting in the company tripling profits since 2008 while maintaining industry-leading employee satisfaction rates. Bandwidth enforces vacation policies by monitoring communication channels and blocking email access, while Full Contact offers $7,500 paid vacations with strict disconnection requirements. Employees must completely unplug and cannot work while away. SAS Institute stands as the gold standard in this approach, implementing a 35-hour work week, unlimited sick leave, comprehensive on-site health care, and extensive recreational facilities including swimming pools and tennis courts. CEO Jim Goodnight, worth $7.2 billion, operates from a practical business perspective, famously stating, "After 8 hours, you're probably just adding bugs." This philosophy has led to remarkable results. The company's turnover rate remains below 4% in an industry averaging 20%, saving approximately $100 million annually in recruiting and training costs. However, corporate wellness initiatives cross into dangerous territory when they invade personal privacy and autonomy. Health tracking apps, mandatory biometric screenings, and executives acting as body police transform employees from humans into widgets to be optimized. Recent surveys indicate 3 in 10 workers believe their health is none of my organization's business, actively resenting intrusions that violate their dignity and autonomy. Some companies now require employees to wear fitness trackers or participate in weight loss challenges, creating uncomfortable workplace dynamics. The wellness programs that many companies impose often backfire spectacularly when they're coercive rather than supportive. Penn State's controversial Take Care of Your Health program, requiring intimate health disclosures from employees and their spouses, created national uproar and eventual policy reversal. Research from Rand Corporation shows such programs rarely save money and often put undue stress on employees, with participation rates dropping significantly when programs feel mandatory. The crucial question leadership must address is whether they genuinely care about employee health or just healthcare costs. Wellness initiatives succeed when they're voluntary, engaging, respectful of personal dignity, and integrated into a broader strategy to create an exceptional work experience. They consistently fail when they're coercive, invasive of privacy, and focused more on cost savings than genuine employee well-being. Companies like REI and Microsoft demonstrate this by offering wellness benefits without tracking or mandates, resulting in higher voluntary participation and better outcomes. In today's digital environment, transparency is no longer optional but essential. With declining trust levels, especially among millennials and Gen Z workers, silence from leadership breeds suspicion rather than confidence. Research shows that 1 in 4 workers report being kept in the dark on important issues, and these employees are 3.5 times more likely to wish they worked elsewhere. Companies that maintain transparency consistently see employees who better focus on customers, work harder, recommend their workplace, and generate better ideas. Studies indicate that transparent organizations experience 30% higher employee retention rates and report 38% more employee innovation. Some companies have responded to transparency demands with increased surveillance measures, recording meetings, tracking social media activity, monitoring email communications, and scrutinizing LinkedIn recommendations for signs of job hunting. Companies like Amazon and Microsoft have implemented sophisticated employee monitoring systems. However, this approach often backfires, creating paranoid workplace cultures that employees describe as prison-like or cult-like. Studies show that excessive monitoring can reduce productivity by up to 40% and increase stress levels significantly. In response to corporate opacity, Robert Homan and Rich Barton created Glassdoor, applying to workplaces the same transparency principles they'd used successfully at Expedia. The site allows employees to anonymously rate employers across multiple dimensions, from salary information and benefits to management effectiveness and company culture, creating an unprecedented window into workplace realities. Despite limitations like self-selection bias and potential conflicts of interest, Glassdoor has grown to include over 50 million reviews across hundreds of thousands of companies. Notable examples include tech giants like Google and Facebook receiving praise for their innovative cultures, while others face scrutiny for toxic environments. The transparency revolution extends far beyond review sites. Social media platforms enable employees to share workplace experiences instantly, from celebratory LinkedIn posts about company achievements to critical Twitter threads about workplace issues. Internal communications are routinely leaked to the press, as seen with famous memos from companies like Netflix and Uber going viral. Compensation data is increasingly available through sites like PayScale, Comparably, and Salary.com, making pay disparities harder to hide. Even company financials, once closely guarded, are now dissected by employees who understand their implications for job security and advancement. This new reality requires leaders to communicate with unprecedented honesty and frequency. When bad news must be delivered, such as layoffs or restructuring, the best approach is direct communication that respects employees' intelligence and provides context. Companies like Airbnb and LinkedIn have been praised for their transparent handling of pandemic-related layoffs. When mistakes happen, acknowledging them quickly prevents rumors from filling the information vacuum, as demonstrated by JetBlue's rapid response to operational failures. When changes are coming, involving employees in the process rather than surprising them builds trust, with companies like Buffer taking radical transparency approaches by publishing all employee salaries and company metrics publicly. Meaning drives workers far more powerfully than money. Most organizations dictate purpose statements from the top down, but the Motley Fool takes a different approach. Their sixth core value is left blank for employees to define themselves. When one employee wrote, "I like to have a beer at 4 o'clock on Friday," CEO Tom Gardner asked why. The employee explained it helped him transition from work to home and enjoy time with colleagues, a personal value that mattered to him. In life-saving professions like medicine or teaching, purpose is compelling. In less serious occupations, people still seek meaning, either from lifelong interests or discovering purpose along the way. Whether someone finds meaning largely depends on leadership, how employees are treated, made to feel important, and how genuinely leaders embrace the mission. Even DMV work can be meaningful when framed as helping teenagers on milestone days rather than an endless slog of forms. Zookeepers exemplify meaning-driven work. Despite low pay, under $25,000, physically demanding, dirty work, and limited advancement, they demonstrate extraordinary commitment. When researchers asked what would make them quit, many couldn't imagine leaving. They see themselves as part of larger conservation movements, making even mundane tasks meaningful. Anything I do is ultimately for the animals. This deep commitment creates higher expectations of leadership. They expect managers to share their dedication and hold everyone accountable. Leaders take three approaches to meaning. Some fail to understand its power, focusing solely on financial outcomes. Others understand but manipulate it through empty sloganeering, and a select few genuinely share employees' commitment to purpose. The authentic leaders may not give the slickest speeches, but employees listen when they speak. Only leaders for whom the organization's purpose has personal significance can nurture the meaning their employees find in their work. The most powerful sources of meaning connect individual contributions to larger impacts. Healthcare workers can see how their efforts improve patients' lives. Teachers witness students' growth. Software developers create tools that solve problems for thousands of users. Even in seemingly mundane roles, meaning emerges when employees understand how their work affects others positively, whether customers, colleagues, or communities. the Stanford Marshmallow Experiment reveals how environment shapes our approach to delayed gratification. In a follow-up study at Rochester University, researchers found that children's ability to wait for rewards depends heavily on their trust in the environment. When researchers broke promises about better art supplies, only 1 of 14 children waited for the second marshmallow, compared to 9 of 14 who had experienced reliable promises. This suggests that waiting for future rewards isn't just about willpower, it's about rational assessment of whether promises will be kept. Life itself resembles one big marshmallow experiment. The human brain constantly engages in episodic future thought, with the average person thinking about the future 59 times daily. Our optimistic view of the future motivates present effort, whether resisting a marshmallow or working on long-term projects. Importantly, our ability to envision positive futures depends largely on positive past experiences. Those who've seen promises fulfilled are more likely to trust future promises. In workplaces, only about half of American workers feel excited about their organizational future, with many uncertain about their next career steps. When employees can't see a promising future at their company, they logically and emotionally seek it elsewhere. As Scott Adams experienced when an editor saw his potential as a cartoonist, few things are more motivating than having someone believe in your future. The data shows it's nearly impossible for employees to feel optimistic about their personal future if they don't believe their company has an exciting future ahead. Among those least optimistic about their futures at their employers, 62% plan to leave within a year, compared to just 3% of the most optimistic employees. The connection between perceived future prospects and retention is clear across countries. As one young British worker put it, "What motivates me most are the things I will get out of this job for my future." While many companies now claim we can't guarantee people's futures and have shifted career management responsibility to employees, the psychological reality remains unchanged. People invest most heavily in organizations promising future returns. This creates a fundamental contradiction. Companies expect employee commitment to long-term business goals while offering increasingly little commitment in return. With corporate time horizons shrinking, employees receive the message to help build the company's future, but you're on your own for yours. Companies today may not be able to promise lifelong careers, but they must at minimum see and develop their people's potential, helping them build credentials useful even elsewhere. Without this, if employees see no second marshmallow in their future, they'll naturally take what they can get now and move on.